Number 9. Railway Bridge. I just wanted to hear that again. As we listened to a story about the start of the pit coming along Middlefield, from Old Ollerton to this bridge, it makes sense to listen to the last story, which is also kind of about the pit closing, as we walk back. If it's still playing when you get to the end of Middlefield, remember to be careful when you cross over the road, because it can get really busy. And it's Wellow Road we go down, back into the village. Not Church Road, but the road a little bit further on to the left. Let's meet again at that bench by the church. This is the story. It's called Striking, and it's set in the 1990s.
I don't really know why my old man started having a thing about the Geordies. I think it began when I couldn't get a house. I was a bit desperate because me and Alan had been living at Mum and Dad's for 2 years. When they started building the new houses, Dad and me went down with the baby and the pram and picked one out. And then we found out that they weren't council houses, but houses for those whose pits had shut up in the north and were on their way down. And Dad blew his bloody top. "It used to be a model village," he said. "Now look at it. You know who to blame, don't you? The bloody Geordies. It was all right till they came down, with their carnival bands and the jolly boys and making Tuffy's shop sell black bloody bullets. And don't get me started on the bowls club. Then there's the bloody leaks. It's all they talk about, half of them. A leak club. Have you ever heard of anything so daft?" And he started to grow them. He was going to beat them at their own game. And he was going to grow the biggest bloody leak you saw, even if it killed him. We didn't see him for ages after that. He was up in his allotment day in, day out. But they were pathetic. Every single one he grew. He blamed everything. The soil, the seed, the fertiliser. And then a mate of his looked at his crop and said, "Maybe it really does need a northerner to grow a good leek." And 15 years of friendship came to an end. Dad had always enjoyed his work up to that point, enjoyed being a miner and was proud of it. I'll never forget the look on his face when he was chosen to go down with the coal board chairman when they opened the park gate seam. Like he was bloody royalty. But it was changing here in Ollerton. There hadn't been a model village for years. It was a battleground now. The NUM and the National Coal Board were slugging it out, and Dad had never really been a union man. He couldn't understand what was going on. When the strikes happened in the 70s and the wages rocketed and everyone wanted to be a miner, he was talking about packing it in and getting a job with his brother at the brickyard. "It's not like it was," he said. "You used to look out for each other. There was comradeship. You could curse a man black and blue, and once you got out, it would all be forgotten and you could have a drink with him the same night. Now it's just got greedy somehow." Uncle Ken had always been working on the bricks, just as Dad had always been a miner. On his very first day, a man had his arm ripped off by a rotating clay machine. The company inspector wrapped it up in a sack bag, handed it over to Uncle Ken, gave him a spade and said, "Here, youth, take this and bury it by the railway embankment." It wasn't the best way to start a job, but he loved it. He'd spent the last 20 years kiln burning. "I've become attuned to heat," he used to boast. "If you give me a spud and a pile of ashes, I can tell you exactly how long you'll need to bake the thing before it melts in your mouth. To the minute." Dad used to joke with him that he was nothing but a bloody stoker, that a monkey with a stick could do the job. But he envied him, really, as time went on and the arguments between the management and the workforce built at the colliery. And then the big one came. Alan went on strike, which caused no end of aggravation with my father. And we stopped talking, Dad and I, once it all started turning nasty. And it was. It really was. It was a terrible thing to live through. You'd be lying in bed and the flying pickets would arrive and you'd hear them running down the street at 4:30 in the morning. They were looking to see whose lights were on, because if anybody had one on downstairs, it could only mean that they're getting ready for work. They'd come and park right outside the gate waiting for you. Dad used to get up and put the light on just to see them coming towards the house. Then he'd open the curtains and flick the V's. He must have had that window reglazed a dozen times. Alan stayed out pretty much till the end, and I got behind it as best I could, working with all the other women who wanted to support their families by joining in the fight, because that's what it was, a fight to the death. Some of the men who were working reckoned that we were running the show. They didn't like seeing all these women getting involved. But you just ask my mother, who has to bear the brunt of a life taken up by working underground day after day, year after year. And when it was all over, we just couldn't bring ourselves to break the silence, Dad and I. There was nothing to say, really. He wasn't going to apologise, neither was I. We both knew we were right. And that's the way it was all over. Families and best friends ripped apart by coal stocks, flying pickets and the Met. We didn't speak for years after that, not until the day they blew the headstocks. Bloody ridiculous, I know. But Alan and I were there amongst all the others, and Dad came up to me and put his arms round me and started to weep, and I'd never seen that before. We sat in the plough that evening and talked. Of the first face I worked on, there were 48 colliers, he told me, and there's only 3 left now. I look at all the old pictures in the house and I think, he's gone, he's gone, he's gone, he's gone. Every time they die, there's an autopsy and it comes out as an industrial disease. I wonder what mine will be. It was his funeral last week. Emphysema. All that time, all that bloody time wasted. All that waste. My daughter's getting married next week. A Geordie lad. The first day he came round for dinner, he brought some leeks from his father's allotment. Lovely they were.
That's the last of the stories, and we're almost finished now. When you get back to the bench we sat on, near the church, then go to the next track, where we'll hear from some people who work on Station Road.